welcome to iConversations. I'm Laura Fantacci, co-founder of Wardrobe Icons, and today I'm with my good friend, writer and Wardrobe Icons editor-at-large, Deborah Brett. I've known Deborah for over 10 years, and what I quickly found out is that Deborah is always ready to help out when you need it and give you good advice. In fact, it is one piece of her advice that has inspired the world of this podcast, perfection. In last year's Mother's Day issue of Icons Update, we asked all of our favorite women to share the advice they gave their children, and Deborah sent shivers down my spine. She said, strive for excellence in everything you do, but not perfection. The first is a goal, the second is a straitjacket. For someone who appears so perfect, this might seem a little strange. However, Deborah is no stranger to less than perfect situation. After experiencing a career crisis, the breakdown of a marriage, and the loss of her mother, Deborah has embraced imperfection and mastered the art of focusing on and sharing the good aspects of her life. Hi, DB.
Hey, Lara.
This is new.
What, us chatting forever, nonstop?
No. With a microphone stuck to our chin, I suppose it's the first time.
It's helping my tiredness.
That busy life you lead.
Oh my God, it's gone up a notch.
So our word today is perfection, which I think is such a relevant and interesting word these days.
Yeah.
And the reason we've chosen this word for you is because I have a lot of friends, like friends in my, school moms and family that follow you on Instagram.
Yeah.
And more often than not, they will say, oh, God, I love Deborah Brett. I just, that Instagram feed with the cakes and the reefs and the, Ibiza house. I mean, her life is just perfect, right?
Right.
And there's a hint in that of, I would say, almost like disbelief or like a little bit of like, there's a bit of inquiry in that profession. It doesn't feel always 100% positive.
Mm.
And I'll often say, well, no, it's not. None of our lives are. And I know that Instagram can be this like really deceptive like window that we can curate and make look perfect, but
yeah.
The life behind it are not. And
no.
And I know you very well. I've known you for a long time, and I know the struggles that you've gone through in your life and the things that have happened which make it less than perfect. And so I will often ponder about that and think, why is that? Why is it that it looks perfect, and why is it that we want to almost give that impression when...
Well, I think that this topic is an enormous topic. Mm. And I think that sort of discussing from an Instagram, from that just a very small window into the idea of perfection, I think that when Instagram started, I fell in love with Instagram. I've never been on Facebook. I haven't been on other forms of social media. But actually, Instagram, I really gelled with. And that was because it was beautiful. And ultimately, I'm an aesthete. My whole job, my life is about creating beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And creating beauty specifically when I worked in magazines, creating these epic, beautiful photo shoots. And with a gorgeous model in the beautiful dress on a beautiful location, everything was perfect. And so I'm drawn to that naturally. So when Instagram came along, this was the perfect showcase for me to just post a pretty picture.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I loved. I loved waking up in the morning. That wasn't so much based on sales or pitching or brands. It was about people posting something beautiful and making you smile. And I suppose that is really my motivation.
Mm.
I don't try to create a perfect world to make others feel worse about themselves. It's just look at this pretty picture and it should bring you joy. And that is literally the motivation behind it. But I know that that can create issues. And a lot of people can obviously feel intimidated by that. So the reality, and that's where I love my Instagram stories, because if you follow me and you look at my stories or also my IGTV videos, which I've just started doing, you will often see the cake fall off the cake stand.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see the icing not working out and me having to redo the icing or whatever it is on my biscuits. So there's a window into the sort of chaos in the everyday as well.
Yeah. I think you're often actually not wearing makeup.
Yeah.
You might be wearing, you're stylish, but still, you might be in your joggers and a sweater.
Yeah.
You don't put up that kind of,
No.
per se.
And also, I'm sort of either getting my 5-year-old to video me, or I'm propping it against a plant pot so that I can sort of video me icing. So it's very lo-fi.
You said something we had in our mother's issue about a year ago.
Yeah.
We asked some of our favorite women in the industry and some of tastemakers and influencers to talk about a suggestion that they would give to their children. Some advice that they would pass on to them that would help them in their lives. And I remember Petra reading them out to me because she was editing that page, and she read your quote, which really gave me sort of shivers, because I thought it really resonated with me as a perfectionist myself. And it was that you tell your children to strive for excellence rather than perfection, because one is a goal and the other is a straitjacket.
Yeah.
And I found that really interesting and so true. Mm. Why do you tell that to your children?
Well, I think that, you know, I have 3 children and they're all incredibly different. And I think that you recognize traits in your children, not just visually how they look, but also their character. And my daughter number one, who is 9, but also my second daughter as well, not not quite as much, are really tough on themselves. And I recognize myself in them. I'm a very different person to the child and teenager and 20-something woman that I was. I've changed a lot through life experience. And so I recognize these gorgeous girls who have so much potential and are so bright and shining, and yet they're so damning about themselves because they're striving for this perfection. Yeah, so I try to tell her or talk to her and engage with her about recognizing doing the best that she can do at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not perfect, then that's okay.
Yeah.
And no one will think less of her, and I will not think of less of her, and she must learn to not think less of herself. And so all the stuff that you see me do on Instagram with my cakes and my decorating and my house doing and whatever it is, I try and do it the best that I can do it. And that idea of striving for excellence means that I'm always pushing the boundaries. Each year my birthday cakes get better. Each year the way that I do one house and then I redecorate a room, that's better. Or the dinner I cook, or the table I lay, or a ceramic that I make. With practice, each time I get better. But they're not always perfect. And actually, the joy is in the trying, and the joy is in the making, and the joy is in the sharing.
Mm.
And certainly my daughter does find it hard. I've learned to find it easier through having had experiences in my life that have given me a greater perspective.
Yeah.
She doesn't have that yet. But if I can give her those tools and try and help her to be less judgmental and to enjoy the process as well, because sometimes when you're a perfectionist, you lose yourself in the process.
Absolutely, yes.
So it's about that now-ness. It's so important.
And you mentioned how you were a different teenager and a different child.
Mm.
What was she like? What was Deborah like?
So, I was very ill as a young child when I was 4. I had a life-threatening operation. So I went from a really gregarious child who was very confident to one that was very scared and very clingy and found life very overwhelming. And I think that was because this was in the 70s and hospitals weren't really geared up for having mums sleep over with their children. So I was 4 in a hospital with strangers poking me and cutting me, and I found it very traumatic. And so that really led on to me being quite a shy and had no confidence as a young child. And then I sort of started gaining confidence. And then when I was 13, my mum got diagnosed with cancer. And so I went from being, again, quite carefree to having to be the carer in my family and look after my brothers and do their homework with them, and also deal with the fear of the possibility that my mother would die. And and at the time, again, you weren't even allowed to say the word cancer. It was like you whispered it. Mm-hmm. My mom has cancer. I wasn't able to be a teenager because I couldn't rebel because I was doing homework with my brothers. So that sort of informed the kind of teenager I was, which was a teenager that was really well behaved and never went out with the wrong boys and didn't take drugs and didn't drink and drove responsibly and that sort of
thing. And you were very close to your mom.
And I was very close to my mom. And
how old were your brothers at this time?
My brothers would have been 11 and 9.
So you are the...
I'm the eldest.
And the oldest, yeah.
You know, we got through that. My mom recovered, which was great. And then I sort of went to university and I went to art college. And, you know, then I kind of really found myself. And I was at St. Martin's and I was in this really creative hub. All the people there at the time, Stella McCartney was in my year and Phoebe Philo was the year below me. And Luella Bartley was the year above. Katie Grant was a couple of years above
wow.
me. McQueen was doing MA. Matthew Williamson was finishing his BA when I was starting. So there was this kind of real buzz around the place.
And you found, yeah. I suppose you being at art college and doing things that you were really good at, that's when you gained the confidence. And when you found yourself again, was it by doing things that you liked that you...
Yeah, I mean, I really found myself in creativity yeah. and in art, and yeah. that's really where I would escape. It was a bit of an eye-opener going to St. Martin's, though, because I was always the best at my school. So I was like always the best at art and the most brilliant. And then I went to St. Martin's and I was one of 200 in my class who were the best.
Yeah. Is that how you got your first job?
No, weirdly enough, how I got my first job was me being a perfectionist and an eager beaver. It was that I was doing fashion journalism. I changed with it. When I was at St. Martin's, I actually originally applied for fashion textiles and design. And I changed to fashion journalism. And we had to produce our own magazine, and me being the uber Excel person, I wrote, styled, photographed the magazine. I then got it professionally printed.
Wow.
I had t-shirts made and bags made, and I did like a whole stand. And I'd already been working and doing work experience, and I'd done some work experience at the Telegraph newspaper, and the editor of the Telegraph newspaper was sitting next to the editor of the Times fashion. And, I need some help. Oh, yeah, do you know anyone that could help me? Oh, we had this really good girl called Deborah Brett. She was on our team. She was really good. Oh, look, she's graduating. Oh, I'm going to give her a ring. And they rang me up, and I got offered a job out of college. They saw my work at my final show, degree show, and offered me a job at the Times.
And that's how
I got my break.
It all started.
Yeah, and we were a tiny team. I had this wonderful editor called Grace Bradbury, and Grace at the time had no fashion background. She was a writer. She was a features writer, a fantastic writer, but she knew nothing about fashion. So she was like, Deborah knows everything about fashion. So it was just the two of us on the Times newspaper. It was tiny.
And this was you were what, in your mid 20s?
I was 23.
So life was going pretty well.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what happened though?
I think it was in the March, it was 2003, it was the year before, it was March 2002. I got married at the end of 2001. So about 4 months later, my mom got diagnosed with secondary breast cancer. And we were told that she really wasn't going to live very long. And I'd had this new job, and I had this new marriage, and my mom was dying. So I was trying to carry on being perfect, actually. I wanted to be the perfect wife so that my husband was happy, run the perfect home, be perfect at my job, smile a lot, because that's what magazines, you're presenting this front, you're presenting this kind of beautiful image. I was sort of juggling these balls of perfection, of trying to be perfect, but actually my heart was crumbling because my mom was leaving me, and that fear that I sort of swept under the carpet when I was 13, when that initial fear when she was ill the first time, you know, came back out again. Yeah, it was really awful, actually.
How did you deal with that?
I dealt with putting one foot in front of the other. And I actually, at the time, my best friend and I had always said, we're going to have babies together. So she was all about, let's have a baby. And funnily enough, my mom and my husband at the time were also very keen on for me to have a baby. And I really, I'm a pleaser. I like to make everyone happy. And I'm really still perplexed at where I found the strength to say no. Mm-hmm. Because I said no to my husband, and I said no to my mom, and I never said no to my mom. I would have done anything for her. But I just felt that my life would implode if I had that on top of it. Yeah. I just felt that was one thing too many. And so I said no, but I went to see this at the time, because my friend was like, let's get pregnant. She was obsessed with Zita West, who was this baby guru who's amazing. And so she went to see Zita to try and get pregnant. And she sent me to Zita, and I would turn up at Zita and I would just cry. Would just cry, because her office was next to the hospital where my mom was being treated. And I used to go in there, and she used to give me acupuncture, and I just cry. And she said, actually, you know what? I think you need to see someone. I think you need someone to help you. And my mom had always been the person that I talked to about my issues and the way that my daughters talk to me. So I love that I have that relationship with them. So she found me an amazing therapist who listened. Was the main thing, who listened to me and heard me, and that was an enormous support.
It's interesting that you, as a perfectionist, sometimes you would, you know, put a barrier between yourself and reality, and not, you know, not want to confront that and not ask for help, because you think, but you didn't do
I
that.
Never, well, so I normally never ask for help. I learned that in my therapy. I learned to have the nice Deborah on my shoulder.
Yeah,
you know, when you. I was lucky enough that I had a mother who was so supportive and so much my champion. So she was that person on my shoulder going, you're amazing. But when I lost her, I didn't have anyone. You know, my husband, as we were talking about, my husband left me 2 weeks after my mom died. Yes. And so I lost my mother and I lost my husband at the same time. And then at the same time, my editor at my job decided to try and massacre my career at the same time. So she decided to try and sabotage my work. So I had no stability at home, no stability in my family, and then my job was trying to ruin my career as well. So it was pretty hardcore.
It really got very imperfect.
It really got the most imperfect and the most, I mean, it was, there were moments where I didn't know if I wouldn't drown, actually. Yeah.
And what did you do, at that point to emerge from this, this really kind of dark moment?
Well, I think that through the kind of quagmire of grief, and it's really funny grief, because I was likened when you're grieving to being in a pit of mud. You can't move. You are so slow. Like even brushing your teeth takes like 2 hours. Like literally, I'm not exaggerating. It's like everything is in slow motion. Sounds are muffled. You feel like you're in this weird glass box that's distant from anyone else. That is really what grief is. It's, you are so separate from the rest of the world. You see everything happening outside you, and you're doing everything slowly, and I mean, you can literally barely concentrate on getting dressed. And but through that haze, I had this very strong voice that came through to me. My voice that said, it's very simple. You sink or you swim. I mean, it is that black and white. You will either choose to sink, like just let go. Just, you might end up killing yourself, or you just might end up just dying of a broken heart. That's how bad it was. Or you just go, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to swim. And when I was seeing my therapist, she used to ask me sort of for visualizations, and I love visualizations. I think they're really an incredible tool for day-to-day life. And my visualization was that I was in a sea. So I was in a storm in the sea, and I had a piece of driftwood that was in the sea. And the waves were choppy and white, and they were really coming over my head, but I was clinging onto this tiny bit of wood, and occasionally the water would go up to my nose and I would choke on the water, but I would lift my chin up. That's how I felt every day. That's the state. So normally I would be living in a house. My house would have walls and windows and doors and floors, and it would be solid and made from brick. And I did not have that. Mm-hmm. That's how my life was before. And I had a piece of driftwood. And so my aim day to day was literally to cling on to that piece of wood and maybe find a different piece of wood and then maybe sit on that piece of wood rather than
So it was sinking. Very gradual.
It was really slow.
Did anything happen after that made you regain hope? Anyone in your life?
No.
Well, something must have happened.
Something must have happened. Well, the thing is, as I say to friends who maybe, you know, what I did was I surrounded myself, first of all, with great friends. That was really who supported me and kept me going. I managed to get a core group of women together who were on call 24/7, mm-hmm. and they were amazing.
So friendship.
And friendship really helped me. So those women really, I do owe my life to, because they were the ones that kept me afloat, quite literally. And they would take it in turns to look after me and hang out with me and pep me up. And a lot of those women also had lost a parent. And I didn't know that at the time. Oh, I did know that, but I didn't consciously choose them as friends.
Yes.
But they understood how to sort of treat me like a normal person rather than with kid gloves or this sort of mock sympathy of like, head mm-hmm. tilt. How are you? They'd be like, hey, Deb, you know, what's up? Let's go out and let's get you out for a coffee. Or I had a girlfriend of mine who was dating, who's now her husband, so sweet. Every time he booked a table, he booked a table always for three people. And until a year later, he turned up at a restaurant and he said, Oh no, that's not our table. We're three.
Yeah.
And she had to break it to him and say, no, sweetheart, Deborah's found a boyfriend. She's not coming for dinner. And he'd had me at dinner literally every night for a year. So I had amazing friends and the continued therapy and the continued kind of slow work that it takes. And I had some brilliant people, you know, again, within work. I had one, you know, my editor at the time who, you know, had really tried to ruin my career. And I found the strength after a while to resign mm-hmm. and to walk out of that relationship. And then I had other people within the industry who approached me and said, we love you and we love your work and we love what you do. And that was Team Red who came in and they took me under their wing and let me fly with the work that I wanted to do, which was quite fashion, full on fashion. I was like, really? Red wants my full on fashion? And they were really
supportive.
Yeah. So slowly I built myself up
again. How did the perfectionist in you deal with this life that had been shattered? How did that make you feel? Because I know with myself, I'm a perfectionist too. When things go wrong, it's only really after becoming a mother that I've learned to accept failures and things not going according to a plan. That's what really, when I get asked about what has motherhood taught you, it's that, like, being okay with things going wrong. But at that point, you hadn't had children yet.
No, I hadn't.
So it must have been quite unsettling for you, I can imagine, if we're, you know, made of the same stoffa in Italian, fabric.
Yeah.
That you kind of sometimes don't want to accept it. Were you ever ashamed of how things had gone?
The one thing, although I can say that my ex-husband did not behave the best way in leaving me 2 weeks after my mom died, because I had promised him things would get better, in the sense that that was the lowest I was ever going to really get. Yeah. That was really the darkest point. And although I knew I would have also other dark moments, that I would, through work and moving forward, things would get better for me and for hopefully for us. He felt he couldn't commit to that. And the one thing, though, the gift that he did give me, which is a big gift, is that, you know, he laid no blame at me. He laid blame all at his own feet. And so that really allowed me to move forward in my life, knowing that I hadn't done anything wrong. And because as a perfectionist, you know, was I a good enough wife?
Yes.
Had I looked after him? Had I done all this? You know, I was very 1950s housewife with him. You know, dinner was always on the table. My mum might have been dying, but dinner was on the table. You know, it was perfect.
Did your mum do that with your dad?
Yeah, my mum did that with my dad. My mum was like that. So I was literally revisiting and doing what she did. And I think that certainly I don't do that in the relationship that
I have now. No, I was going to say, because I don't see that with you and Tom now. You're independent. And,
yeah, I learned to dance a different dance through therapy, and that was great.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I was able to move forward because he, you know, he let me go in a way. And my life was really the blackest that it could be. And I think, you know, when I mentioned before, I had decided I was either going to sink or swim. And one thing that I didn't want to do was I didn't want to be defined as a victim.
Yes.
Because shit happens to everyone all the time. I mean, no one is immune from the shit. Everyone has tough, everyone loses a parent, and everyone gets ill, and everyone has their friends, you know, be mean to them, or abandon them, or their job fire them, or lose their money, or there's just, everyone has crap.
And you said to me something that was interesting, because you said you don't want to be defined by what happened, and you certainly are not someone that moans about the past, or like, you know, you're not the type of person that will come up at a coffee or a tea or a dinner and start complaining about the things that, you know, have gone wrong. You'd really concentrate on the positive.
Yeah, I'm a real glass half full person.
Yes, which I think some people, especially in this sort of society and in this country as well, I think it's quite a sort of British trait, you know. Some people think that that might be that you're just putting on a facade because, you know, it's all brilliant. It's all beautiful. Mm. It's all happy. Mm. And some people like to connect through
drama.
Yes.
So, I mean, that was something that I had to really change those relationships with, specifically with a lot of my old friends, because I recognize that especially when you're a teenager, there's always the drama. Oh my god, he didn't call, he didn't text. Oh, it's awful. And you know, there's this drama. And I realized that actually when my worst drama had happened, my mom died.
Yeah,
that's the that
your
was,
husband left
and my husband
you,
left me and my job and you put me in the shitter. I mean, it's like it was all really bad. So what that did was it took away all the fear. It meant that actually I'd been through the worst and I'd survived. Mm-hmm. And so it does, that definitely gives you a whole new perspective and a calmness. There were moments at the very beginning of that process where I was actually quite dark because of that, because then I would go to people's weddings and think like, oh, I don't even know why you're bothering. It's going to fail anyway and you're all going to die. I mean, I was quite black, but then I got over that I went, you know, went through the process. But I think that my old friends really had the hardest time adjusting to the new me.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to kind of scoop me back into those old dynamics and that old drama. Really, ultimately, I believe in balance. And so that balance for me is I've decided to be glass half full. I see the positivity in life. I see the positivity in people. I see the beauty in the world. And that doesn't mean that I don't see the bad things, but I choose to embrace the good.
You do. So in terms of what you want to teach your children and what kind of mother, you know, you are striving to be, what does perfection really mean to you? Like, and what does imperfection also, and what does it... what can both of those things bring to your life, and what can you learn from
what I love? I love women that don't look perfect. I love fashion that's a bit kooky and a bit offbeat, that isn't picture perfect, you know. So, I mean, if you look at my cakes, they're great cakes, they're fun cakes, they're interesting, and I try to be creative. But go online and look at the real Instagram cake people. I mean, those are perfect cakes. You know, those are finished with an inch of perfection and they're, you know, iced just so. Mine aren't. Mine are good. They're home baked.
Yes.
You know?
So your cakes are not perfect.
They're not perfect.
I think what people want to hear is that Deborah's saying they're not perfect.
But they're not. But that's the point. It's who are you measuring yourself against?
Yeah.
They're perfect for me. Like, I love them, and I like that homespunness about them. They're really not perfect to compare them.
We bonded over imperfection, actually, because we met when, well, we didn't meet, but we bonded when we were at Red Magazine, and I think I was pregnant, and I had Greta, and I really struggled the first few months. It was so hard for the, you know, for this perfectionist in me to let go of not having a routine and being completely at ransom of, you know, this baby that would wake me up in the middle of the night, and it was like Groundhog Day. It was hard, and I remember speaking to you and about, I don't know, I can't remember, maybe Greta had a temperature or something, and I remember asking you, I mean, how am I going to do this? This is so hard. And you said to me, do you remember this? Yeah, you said to me, well, the thing is, you can have a plan, have the plan, write down the plan, make all the plans you want, the feeding, the hours, have it all, because it will make you feel good. But what you really need to do is be prepared to say, fuck it all.
Yep.
And be surprised by the fact that all of that plan is going to go completely messed up.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, and that was some, it was very valuable advice. And I think that you're a very generous person in that respect, because at least in our friendship, I feel like you've always, you know, given me that advice and that support without asking anything back, and very openly, and not a lot of people would do that. And I think that coming from someone like you, that I, you know, I also look at, I could look at you and think, oh, it's all great. I know it's not, but, you know, it was eye-opening to have that advice specifically from someone that strived for that same type of order. Let's put, not even call it perfection, let's call it order. You know, we function better that way. So I think I was very grateful for that as well.
Well, I mean, I do. The sad thing, you know, about losing my mother is that it taught me so much. So the idea of having to go back to the person that I was is... it would be impossible. You know, I wouldn't want to be that person anymore, because I really wasn't very happy. And I think that I've become so much happier in learning to lose that idea of perfection. And I try to give very little advice, because the last thing I want to do is come across as sanctimonious. Oh, listen, when I had a baby, you know, this sort of thing. But actually that, I know that I would have been a very different mother had I not learnt my lesson when my mother passed away, in order to just let go of things. And I would have been a much more controlling and trying for it to be perfect and failing at perfection, because you can't win. You can't win. You can't be perfect. It's not possible. It doesn't exist. It's not real. I'm really thankful of the lessons that I learnt and that I taught myself when my mother passed away. And it allowed me to meet a new partner who embraces all of me and loves all the good bits and the annoying bits, and still thinks I'm fab 16 years later. And definitely motherhood is really the biggest challenge for a perfectionist. And that's okay, because life doesn't end. You know, my mum died, my husband left me, my job imploded. Life didn't end. I picked it up, I rebuilt it, and I rebuilt it in a fashion that I love, that I'm proud of. I found a new partner, had three children, we've built a home, we've built a life together, and we still have ups and downs and trials, as anyone does, but we put our foot in front of the other and go with the flow.
And learn from the imperfection.
And learn from the imperfection.
And maybe be surprised by them as well.
And love them.
Yeah.
It can be really good.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Deborah, for such an insightful conversation. I think the takeaway from this is that we shouldn't be fooled by the window of Instagram. Everyone has their hiccups, and we shouldn't be so quick to judge. What I love about Deborah is her ethos that positivity attracts positivity, and that it's good karma to send a positive message. I can't think of a better intention for the new year than that. Thanks for listening to iConversations. It turns out talking never goes out of fashion. You can find more episodes of these insightful conversations with the women who inspire us
on Apple Podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps to get the word out.